Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Anaheim Ducks Flying V podcast on the Believe Podcast Network, Southern California's number one sports podcast network, the only place with a show for every team in Southern California and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? So yeah, this is episode 8. Your co-host Anthony Tridelli here, and with me today from Orange County, but over the phone is Kent Huskins. Kent, how are you doing?
Yeah, hey Anthony, you're doing well, thanks. Yeah, sorry, we had a couple of late scratches at the coffee shop this weekend, so I had to fill in on some shifts and do some work there. So yeah, we're pushing to the rare Sunday night broadcast here. This is cool, but the kids are in bed, so we're all clear.
Excellent. How many coffees did you have to make this weekend? Did you get any barista action?
I was actually yesterday. Yeah, I mean, I do the coffees. I'm still not. My goal was to be on espresso and whipping up some lattes with the latte art. And my goal was to do that by the start of the season, and I did not achieve my goal. But I'm still there, basically, kind of doing everything else that I can, like, you know, getting on the cash and talking to everyone, and yeah, I'll pour the coffees and make a mean avocado toast and do the dishes and clean the bathrooms and do all the fun stuff there. But as far as the meat and potatoes of the business, is the coffee. I leave that to our staff and their skills.
Very nice. Well, we got a lot to cover today, going all the way back to the Calgary game that we both went to a week ago, and that was a tough 2-1 loss to the Flames there. Cam Talbot kind of stole that one, and then I kind of have down the debacle in Nashville, and then Dallas, Colorado, and Vegas tonight. It's been a very interesting week for the Ducks. Definitely some up and downs. We've had some injuries. We've had a trade. So a lot to get to here tonight. But Kent, first impressions from this week. Well, what did you see first starting in Calgary and just kind of generally for the whole week?
I think, yeah, I mean, having the Ducks start the way they did, with coming out of the gates so well, having some big wins against Buffalo and Carolina at home, getting out to a 6-2 start. I think if you kind of look at the big picture as far as the start of the season till now, I think that's probably a microcosm of the way the season's gonna shape up for not just the Ducks, but a lot of teams. I feel like there's gonna be a lot of three-game win streaks, three-game losing streaks, just kind of up and down. That's just the nature of the league nowadays. And especially in the West and in the Pacific, where it's, in the East, I think you have the divisions where the top three are a little more predictable. But as far as the Pacific this year, I think it's just going to be a dogfight, especially for – I think the number one seed I kind of have in my mind, who I think is probably going to wind up there. But anything after that is kind of best guess at this point. So I think it's been an interesting stretch. I think, yeah, we're going on the road is always tough for an extended period of time, especially when you have travel and back-to-back games and that kind of thing, and some tough opponents and some tough arenas. So I think it was a good indication of kind of where they Ducks realistically are at as compared to kind of the rest of the Western Conference at least. And but yeah, I guess we'll go back and starting with the game that we both went to, sat up in the press box at least for a little bit for Calgary. What were your thoughts on that game?
I thought it was encouraging to see the way the Ducks played. It was tough that they went out to the early lead, I believe, and then they scored first, and then Calgary came back and kind of took the lead, and Cam Talbot, I will say, stole the game. Just played really well in the final period, and especially when the Ducks had the goalie pulled. I think he robbed Nick Ritchie on a couple of opportunities. It was a physical game as well. Matthew Tkachuk, not Brady, the older one, really was bringing some physicality to the game. That's why they had Nick Delorier playing and a lot of scrums in front of the net. But I think the Ducks showed once again that they can compete with a playoff team from last season, a competitive, highly skilled team in the Calgary Flames, and they can kind of muck it up and get physical if they need to. So that was an encouraging sign. And again, we had the defense jumping up into the offense to get that first goal. The pass from, I think it was Lindholm to Manson, or Manson to Lindholm, and then over to it was so far back now, Silverberg, I think.
Good memory.
It was just a prime example of what Eakins and has been encouraging. What everybody's been talking about this season is defensive participation in the offense.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that was front and center's my notes as well, was that first goal. I think a little late arrival by yours truly there. Some musical chairs with the car seats throughout the day put me a little behind schedule. But just as we kind of sat down and got situated coming out of the first intermission, the Ducks had that awesome play right off the opening faceoff, and yeah, not just one, but both D jumping up in the rush and creating that awesome, beautiful goal there. Awesome setup. And then kind of had that weird Flames first goal where Delzato and Monahan were kind of battling in front, and it looked like Gibson was tracking, kind of lost sight of the puck, which, I mean, is understandable with all the bodies back there and just the angle from where the puck was in relation to Delzato and Monahan. He kind of just lost it for that split second. And I believe it was Stone, the defenseman, had an unbelievable shot. I mean, it was either a perfectly placed shot or just a fortunate kind of seeing eye shot. But either way, that picked the corner cleanly, and that was a good hard shot from the point to tie it up 1-1. And then your boy Matthew Tkachuk with a great quick pass on that 2-on-1, and finished off there by, oh, I forget the guy's name, Backlund, I think was who got the game winner. But yeah, I think just definitely, I think as a Ducks fan, another game where they put a, it was a great showing, solid showing, nothing, no takeaways, like they couldn't hang, as you mentioned, with the playoff competitor from last year, and all indications, like, both teams played well, played hard, had their turn carrying the play. It was just one of those games where you kind of, I call them kind of a coin flip, like it could easily go either way. And on that night, it just happened to bounce Calgary's way for the 2-1. And from there, the boys went on the road to Nashville. Debacle. It's a debacle in Nashville. Start us off. What did you think of that one?
I think that game was indicative of a problem that they're going to have it for much of the season, and that is their, once again, lack of discipline. They had a multiple penalties in the first period. I think Nashville's first goal resulted from a 5-on-3. And we saw, we'll get to this later, we saw tonight a lot of penalties taken in the Vegas game as well, but it seems to be more of a deeply ingrained problem than just a Randy Carlyle coach team type thing. Like, I remember I asked Eric Stevens of The Athletic last year in a question and answer if it has something to do with the general speed of their team, and he kind of said, no, this is, it's a byproduct of Randy Carlyle's style that he wants them to play. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that anymore. Now it's kind of become more or less a continuation from there. Like, and I'm wondering if you think this as well, if it has something to do generally with their team speed. There was a lot made last year about the Ducks playing a faster style of offense and just trying to play a faster game, adjust with the increasing speed of the NHL. And they've done that kind of this year on offense. They've been able to generate chances and possess the puck, but it's a two-way sport. You have to be able to defend those speedy teams that are in the NHL, and I think that's something they're struggling to do, and I don't know if that's having an inherently not as fast of a team team just skating wise, or if their defensive schemes aren't quite still caught up to the speed that the NHL is. But you're seeing a lot of penalties that they're taking that are obstruction penalties, hooking, tripping, interference, holding. And they're, I think, the second most penalized teams in terms of minors in the NHL as of tonight, and the fourth in terms of time shorthanded. I wonder, am I totally wrong in that maybe it's that it's still adjusting to the speed that's causing them to be kind of out of position and take these penalties that are a result of trying to make up that kind of error in positioning?
Penalties are a tough thing because a lot of it's just built into the nature of the sport. And you think of undisciplined penalties as far as like someone losing their cool taking an extra punch, or responding to someone else's chirp and losing their mind and taking that extra 2 minutes, or it's always definitely if someone gets the first shot in, it's always, I don't know why it is, but it's always the retaliatory penalty that gets that. I don't know if it's that by the time the ref looks over, he missed the first one, but he knows something's going on, he always catches the second one. So anything retaliatory or undisciplined, I think is fixable. But I think if we want to dial back or go back to the Calgary game, so on the first goal, D's jump up, it's great, and that it's aggressive, everyone loves that. But there's a reason why everyone doesn't send their D all the time, that only some people do it. And if you kind of take a look at the game winning goal on Calgary, it's following that same template of D jumping, everyone of being aggressive, getting up ice. But when it doesn't work and you wind up with a 2-on-1 going back the other way, which Calgary scores on. So if you have an aggressive mentality and you're going to live by the sword, and you're going to die by the sword. And if that's the style that you want to play, it's fun to watch. I don't think I've talked to a single Ducks fan this year that has an issue with the style that the Ducks are playing, or that we've kind of possibly heard over at certain stretches when it's not working over the past couple of years. But I think with the aggressive style, you're going to give up. When it's working well, you'll give up slightly less than you create. And when it's not working, which it's not going to on every night. And so you're going to give up more than you gain by being aggressive. So again, the double-edged swords of the style that they're playing, but I think it creates for an exciting brand of hockey. So I guess that's why they figure with Gibson and Miller, they can afford to play that aggressive style and have the good goaltending kind of fill in the blanks. But I saw the Nashville game a little differently. I thought the Ducks, actually, when I saw the scoreboard and saw 6-1, Nashville's a tough barn to play in, and I was kind of it looked at first glance like, oh, they must have got blown out of the building. But watching the game, I thought they played well. They had a number of scoring chances. They were creating, they were playing aggressive. Yeah, they had some turnovers. Again, that's going to happen when you're kind of given that license to be creative. Going to have turnovers, which they did. And it seemed like they just played against a highly skilled, good team with a world-class goalie. And Rene made some awesome saves. The penalties on that one, the 5-on-3, seeing the call to put him down 5-on-3, I mean, that was an absolute joke. To call that a cross check. I'm not sure which player it was in the corner that got called, but he basically out battled the guy and got called for a cross check. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm pro player as always, but I think that was a weak call. But I mean, yeah, there's, I would say it's hard to take 10 games. And if you're going to be, that highly ranking NHL as far as penalty minutes, if it's the same after in the second 10 games of the season, then I think there's probably cause for a little concern. But I think it's just the nature of the sport. There's going to be ebbs and flows as far as penalties and how many you're taking, and penalty power play versus penalty kill, and how many you're getting of each on a nightly basis. But yeah, as for style, I like it. I like where they're at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't change the way they're playing in terms of general, like just offensive attacking and what you mentioned. I am a little bit still concerned about the penalty problems they have, or that they've had, but the heading into the Dallas game, it was another close one. I think it was another 2-1. I believe it was 2-1 final score. It was not quite as close as I think as the Calgary game was. Dallas did a good job of playing a very defensive kind of salting away the game, not allowing a lot of opportunities after they got the lead, which is unusual for how they've played so far this season. But they're a good team, kind of a sexy Stanley Cup pick for a lot of people. But what was your impression of that game?
Yeah, I was definitely one that was drinking the Dallas Kool-Aid before the start of the season. I just liked the team they had and what they did last year, and with everyone coming back, basically, and adding Perry and Pavelski, I still think that's a good hockey team. They had a rough start. And again, I think the symptom of the modern day NHL, that's why the season's 82 games. I think they'll be there in the end. But yeah, I think that game, another coin flip for me. I think, you look at the goals that went in, basically same player coming down on his back end. First one, barring in. I think I think Gibson makes those saves probably 99% of the time. Backhands are tough. Any goalie will always tell you, because it's a lot harder to read where the puck's coming off the stick. So if you're gonna come in and go barring in on a backhand, it's a pretty good shot. But the second one along the ice, I think he probably was reading that he was going to go high again. And then the guy who knows, he might have fanned on it went in along the ice. But it's hard to ever fault the Anaheim goalies when you look at the 60-minute highlight package and seeing some of the 10 bell saves that Gibby or Miller make on a nightly basis. So it's tough to win when you only get one goal in the NHL. So another tough road game. But again, they showed up. They played well. They battled. I don't think anyone could fault the effort or the execution or anything like that. It's just not their night again.
Yeah, and they faced Ben Bishop. I mean, Ben Bishop is gigantic. He's a very good goalie. So you kind of see how it would be tough to score in that game. They did get 30 shots on goal, so it wasn't like tonight, which we'll get to in a little bit. But yeah, then they went to Colorado, where we had a win, and it was I believe it was 5-2, and that actually secured a 500 record for this very tough month of October that they've had. I mean, they will have no worse than a 500 record in a month where they played playoff teams from last year, teams from this year who are lighting it up, who weren't in the playoffs last. I mean, this was a pretty tough schedule this month, even with travel and back-to-back games. And I think just briefly being able to get through this month, at least at 500 and in a playoff spot, I mean, it's only October, yeah, but being in the position where they are, considering the schedule that they had this month, is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good sign, and I know I keep going back to it, but just the way they've played and the way they've competed and how they look versus like going toe to toe with all these teams that, like you said, are either dominating this year or were playoff contenders from last year, I think. And going in and as we're getting to Colorado, what a huge win, and what a big just proof of what this team is capable of. And I don't think every team in the league is capable of going in to Colorado and winning 5-2, especially not the way they've been playing recently. But to see them go in and kind of after three losses and kind of band together, and I think if you look at that game out of any of them, I think that one was going to be the toughest, because that's, you know, you get there in Colorado, you got the altitude, and the first period you're just sucking wind. It's hard. You feel like I don't know. It's hard to catch a breath sometimes and get up in that thin air and have McKinnon and Grant and all those guys flying around. I can't even imagine with the speed that team has now. So I don't think a lot of people expected a whole lot of that game, like, other than to be competitive and hope for maybe get a point or get up to overtime and steal it in shootout. But to have a solid 5-2 win, that's great. And just the way they came out ready, and they just, everyone to a man, came out and put a great performance together.
And I think this was mentioned on the broadcast of the game, but I wonder if the Ducks can use the Avalanche and Ducks fans can use the Avalanche as an example of maybe what the Ducks can be in a couple years. And by that, I mean 2-3 years ago, the Avalanche missed the playoffs. And 2 years ago, they were a surprise playoff team. I think they get bounced by Nashville, but they give them a tough series. And then last year, they beat Calgary. They make it all the way to, I believe, the conference finals against San Jose, where that was where the infamous offsides call happened. So I wonder, and now they're a fast team. They have a strong defensive core. They have tools on offense. I wonder if that is what the blueprint is for the Ducks kind of retooling.
Yeah, I think it's encouraging. And if you draft well, I think there's a lot of pressure and legwork on the scouts and the analytics teams to get these drafts right. Because if you're strong in that area and you draft well and you can develop your players well, that drastically speeds up any kind of rebuild. So you see, and the way these kids are coming in and between 18, 20 and ready to take on the league, and the level that they're able to perform at young ages now, much more so than in the past. You can definitely, if you play your cards right, you can definitely speed things up as far as a rebuild. So I think, yeah, I mean, all of a sudden to go from where the Ducks were a couple of years ago, as far as maybe average age and prospects in the system to, I think, looking at the guys they've got plugged in there now and what's coming in the next couple of years, I think they're doing a great job. And these kids are developing them, and they're coming in ready, and they're contributing right away. So yeah, that's kind of a blueprint of how you do it. I agree. And I think the Ducks are on track, especially early with how they're playing.
And kind of the notes from the game, really good early start, quick goal from Henrique. I thought the fourth line played great again. You had a Grant from Grant Rowney 2-on-1 rush that resulted in a goal. You had the new guy, Gudbranson, on defense, putting a couple good hits on some Avalanche players. So I think overall it was a good overall performance. And I thought an interesting moment in the game was the challenge that Eakins made for goalie interference there. I think you're trying to keep your two-goal lead, and if you get it wrong, you're giving up another power play, or you get another penalty for delay of game, I believe. You give up another power play. So it was he was kind of between a rock and a hard place. Luckily, the Avalanche don't score, even though he lost that challenge, and they don't score on the ensuing power play. But that's just kind of, I think, a gutsy move and an aggressive move that I like from Eakins coaching to try to kind of maybe get a break for his team in the middle of a three-game losing streak.
Yeah, absolutely. I always love that. Yeah, proactive approach of aggressive on the ice and aggressive with the coaching tactics. I think no one's ever going to argue that. I think, if you're going for it and trying to be proactive, I think that's always a good thing. And mirrors, like I said, what they're trying to do on the ice. And some notes that I had was, they came out ready. They played well right off the start. I had, Rowney and Grant. Noticing Rowney bust up the ice. I don't know where each guy was in his shift, but looks like he was kind of out hustling or out skating Nate MacKinnon, which you don't see very often on the back check, to beat him to the net. It's pretty good stuff. One guy I noticed, and I think the hockey world has been hearing a lot about this guy, and first I've kind of watched him for an entire game, was Cale Makar, and whoa, what a player. Huh. I kind of see what the hype is about. This kid is unbelievable. Him, and I know we didn't talk about it in the Buffalo game, but seeing Rasmus Dahlin in his second year really coming into his own too, a couple of young, exceptional, exciting defensemen. Guys, fun to watch for sure back there. But Cale Makar, 9 assists. And then you look at the Ducks, Hampus Lindholm, 3 assists to bring his grand total for the season to 8 assists. So I know he took some heat after the Boston game or whatever, but just a kind of under the radar sometimes how good he actually is. Great game by him. 3 assists. Always impressive to get his season total to 8. So quietly having a very good year. And I love the start, giving the start to Miller. I think always a good thing. Not that Gibson never deserves to miss games, but I always think it's great letting him have a break. And Miller's been so good so far this year. Always great when he goes in. And this was no different. So another strong performance from him. Let's see. I guess that was all I had for Colorado.
Yep. No, I think it was a good overall win. Good to see Miller in there. And I apologize if I lose you. My phone looks like it's running low on battery, but we'll keep soldiering on until it dies.
I love it.
And then we move on to Vegas, which was, I think, I want to get your opinion on this, just a perfect storm to have a tough game. The end of a long road trip, back-to-back, a very fast team. You're now beset with injuries. You've got Kasha injured, Manson injured, Lindholm is out for that game. I think it was just a perfect storm. First, could you talk about your experience in the NHL, what it was like at the end of a trip like that, where you've been on the road a long time, you just had a game, like how do your legs feel? How tough is it to get back out there and try to like push yourself to the level that needs to be attained to play an NHL game?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's no trouble finding the ability to put forth kind of your max effort and like your max to put everything you have into the game. It's just at that point the tank's a little empty. Your max is just lower than it is other nights, and you have to just play like a perfectly smart you have to have really good changes. You have to be super smart in the first 5-10 minutes. Everything, it has to be a letter perfect performance by each and every guy to have any kind of chance in those games. And I was worried about this game for the fellas there all day today, just because knowing what a big win last night, but man, that travel and going into that hornet's nest there in Vegas, the way they buzz around in that place, and the Knights coming off a tough loss, their worst of the season. So, they were going to be coming out strong, and I was hoping when they got the first goal that maybe they could just kind of hang on and maybe find a way to get to a point or get it to a shootout or but at that point I didn't realize that Lindholm was out as well till the game started. So that's a tough mountain to climb, and that was a tall order today, and Vegas has done that too. The Ducks aren't the first team that they've done that to, and won't be the last team that they'll do that to in that building, just with the atmosphere they have there. So the back end of a 2-2 with travel, that's always tough, but even tougher when going into one of the hardest buildings to play in against a great team that just got thumped a couple nights ago.
Absolutely, yeah. Tough situation to be in. I want to get your thoughts on the Gudbranson trade. So middle of the week, I believe it's a Dallas game. Kasha and Manson go down. Manson with a knee. He's on IR. Kasha, we haven't really heard much from, but Manson's a Ducks only right-handed defender, so they need to do something about it, and they bring in Gudbranson. What are your impressions of him so far?
I don't think I ever played against him. I had a couple of good buddies or coaches for Vancouver. So I watched a few Canuck games and when he was there. I think he definitely, with Manson out, brings an element of physicality. I think Holzer's physical as well, but Branson's just a kind of established guy. He's physical. I think he kind of creates a scenario where other teams know when he's on the ice, big, strong guy, just kind of solid defensive defenseman. I think it was a solid pickup, especially in this scenario with Branson out. I think that's a tough loss for the Ducks. I really like the way he's been playing this year with Lindholm. I thought they've been great, and it's unfortunate where you kind of sometimes you don't really know what someone's doing till they're missing. And I hope Gudbranson comes in. He's had a great career. I know he had some great years in Florida, and big, strong guy, was pretty well, and just a smart defensive guy that play in a lot of those tough situations, kind of defensive zone stuff, do kind of a lot of the dirty work and make life difficult for some of the other forwards.
And he had a good game against Colorado. He was kind of in a tough spot, I think, against Las Vegas. He's not necessarily a top pairing guy, but he had to kind of fill in on the second pairing. He was paired with Delzato, and Cam Fowler and Brendan Gooley were on the top pairing. But Vegas is so deep that you can't really, that doesn't make much of a difference. You're still going against a very good offensive group of forwards. So I think he was also on the second of a back-to-back and with a new team and a new defensive pairing from his first game. So I think that's a tough situation to be in. So I wouldn't necessarily be too concerned about Gudbranson's performance today.
Yeah, no, that's it's tougher for the veteran guys too. You know, the young guys have those young legs, but the veteran guys, you get on the plane, and yeah, you said it, like a second game with a new team, never played with any of these guys. You haven't had the luxury of a training camp to get acquainted with the other players' tendencies. You're paired with new players. You're still learning the system. Like, there's a lot, but even a few days practice every day is going to help. He's going to feel better out there. And I think it was a good pickup, smart move given the circumstances, and yeah, I think he'll be a good fit.
So let's get into the three stars. Today we're talking three best locker room guys, as I have 3% of my battery on my phone.
Oh, there.
So we'll do it. We'll do it, and I'll just let you do yours, and then we'll wrap it up.
Best locker room guys, a couple guys, one guy I played with in the minors. He actually, I played with him in Portland when we were on the farm team for the Ducks the year before the Cup. So the 2005-2006 season, we had a really good team in the minors. Perrin Gutsoff came down. We had Penner on the team, Ryan Shannon, Shane O'Brien, Aaron Rome. We had a lot of guys that went on to Curtis Glenn, Cross, Tim Brandt, that went on to play NHL games. Trevor Gillies, big tough guy. But Zdeněk Knopka was one of the best teammates I ever had. He was hilarious. He was a heart and soul guy, good player, would fight the toughest guy on the other team, but was super honest about it, and just a true competitor, and always hilarious. Loved getting the team together. It's just funny, we'd have these pregame interviews in Portland, and he'd get on the microphone to the arena and just start. It was like a WWE interview, talking about, like, everyone else always wants to be so correct, and, you know, all the Hartford's got a great team or whatever back then. He would just get on there and be like, "We are going to absolutely destroy Hartford tonight. These fans are in for a bloodbath." This guy was just an absolute legend. So Zdeněk Knopka definitely comes to mind. Another guy I mentioned there, Trevor Gillies, kind of in the same vein, ultimate team guy. Tough guys so often in hockey are just the best. And he was another guy. I roomed with him on the road a couple of years in training camp, and was just absolutely tough as they come, but just a great, great guy. Off the ice, always kind of echoing on the ice from the bench, Mr. Positive, cheering on all the boys, getting everyone going on the bench all the time, which is huge in hockey. Kind of an underrated thing that these guys bring to the table, but he always was a big contributor to any team he played on. And the last one was from my time up in San Jose. Joe Thornton's anything you've heard about this guy is true. He is just the best team guy, loves hockey, loves being at the rink, loves the boys, just loves all the trainers, treats everyone awesome, great leader, amazing player, just loves to have fun, loves the game of hockey, just an awesome teammate, and definitely lucky to have played with him and the other two guys as well.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like definitely a good list. And I think that'll do it for episode 8 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast. Thanks, Kent, for coming on down in Orange County. We'll be back in person, hopefully, the next couple weeks, and hopefully with some interviews coming up. We're trying to get that worked out for you guys.
Yeah, we got a couple queued up, working with our good friends over with the Ducks to get some of the fellas on here. But all right, Anthony, thanks a lot, man. Get that phone charged up.
Oh yeah, it's going to be charged up, and I'm going to be charging up too in bed.
All right, buddy, sounds good.
Good night. Talk to you later.
All right, thanks, guys. See ya.
So that was episode 8 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast. Thanks for joining in with me and Husky. As always, you can find me on Twitter at DeliTweets. That's DelliTweets. And on Instagram at DeliMeat. Same first thing and the last one, meat, as in lunch meat, DelliMeat. You can find Kent at HuskVarna on Instagram. That's HUSK_VERNA. Or you can visit him at his coffee shop, Huskins Coffee in Santa Ana. We're available on all of your favorite podcast directories, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, and TuneIn. You can find us at Believe.com, that's BLEAV.com, and at Believe Podcasts on your social accounts. And if you like our show, please go on iTunes or Spotify or whatever podcast directory you want and rate it. Tell everybody how much you like it. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. You can always hit me up or Kent up on Instagram, hit me up on Twitter, and we're going to try to make this show better for you. But for now, thank you, and we'll talk to you next week.